Good morning, Wilson. Let's begin. We left off your test on the base. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13 lines up from the bottom. So if you remember again, the Gemara was discussing yesterday that the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel was a Machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon regarding the nature of Muktzah, right? An expansive view of Muktzah versus a restrictive view of Muktzah, which fundamentally comes down to the idea in order for an item not to be Muktzah, do you have to actively designate it for use before Shabbos, or do we say that no, halacha lemaisa, any object that is technically usable on Shabbos will not fall under the category of Muktzah. I'm not going to get into it now because it's a sugya later on in Shabbos. Ha'u talmida de'uri b'charta de'argiz k'Rabbi Shimon. There was a particular student who paskin, charta de'argiz is a place. Charta de'argiz is a place in the city. So this particular student paskin in charta de'argiz like Rabbi Shimon. Right? Remember, Rashi pointed out that Rabbi Shimon is the one who has the more lenient view of Muktzah. Right? And the Yochanan, there are Gemaras, right? It should be an extra Gemara right back there. So he paskin in charta d'argiz like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon was the one again who has the less restrictive view of muktzah. Shante Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna put him in chayrim. The hawk Rabbi Shimon stirlam. But the Gemara says, why did he do that? We do paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Ba'asrei d'rav hava lo iboile l'me avid hachi. Because the Gemara says this student was living in the city of Rav, and the city of Rav, this student shouldn't have been paskin in halacha. Right? There's a concept of mor halacha b'fnei rabo. That halacha l'maisa, if one is in the presence of the Rebbe, one is not permitted to go out and paskin halacha. So Rav Hamnuna was putting him in chayrim, not because of how he paskin, but simply because he did paskin in the city of Rav when he shouldn't have done so. Hani tre talmidi, chad matzil v'chad mano, v'chad matzil ba'arba v'chamesh mani. So Rav said, the Gemara talks about a particular story over here, or another episode with two students, where a fire broke out. And one, literally translated, one went ahead and saved food in one receptacle, or one vessel, and one saved food in four or five different utensils. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Chad matzil, ochlin umashkin mitnei adleika harbe lochatzer ha-me'ureves. Bechad mana, kidisnan, matzilin sal malekikaros, va'avagav sheishbo me'esudos. So both like, the issue over here, which we're not going to really spend time on now, is, interestingly enough, the halacha is, there's an interesting discussion, if a fire breaks out, how much food are you permitted to go ahead and save from the fire? Now, the Gemara is discussing over here a particular situation where there's not as much a problem of carrying, it's a chatzer me'ureves, but the issue that we're concerned with is, Chazal were concerned that if we allow you just to save anything you want, then a person may come to extinguish the fire. So there are two contradictory mishnayos as to how much you're permitted to save. So the Mishnah just points out over here that one student went ahead and brought out a utensil that contained much food, and one ultimately brought out, the Rashi points out over here, arba v'chamish mani, ela shemekaplin kulin l'soch kli gadol. And one went ahead and gathered four or five different utensils filled with food and put it into one larger utensil and brought it out into the courtyard. And ultimately, this is the subject of the machlokes between Rabba Bar Zavda and Rafuna about how much food you are permitted to save on a fire on Shabbos. Fine, says the Mishnah. Eight Rabbos said, the only reason I'm not getting into it is because this will do this sugya Mirtz Hashem later on in the Gemara. Mishnah. Ein tzolin basar batzol ubeitza. So we quoted this Mishnah a little bit earlier. One is not permitted to go ahead and roast meat or an onion or an egg, unless, of course, they're going to be fully roasted before the onset of Shabbos. Similarly, one may not put bread into the oven right before Shabbos. Nor may they put a biscuit on top of coals. Unless, of course, literally, the face of the bread is going to become crusted before Shabbos starts, which is another way of saying that unless the bread is going to become baked to a certain threshold of edibility, one is not permitted to begin the process on Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kedesh Sheyikrom Hatachtom Shalom. Rabbi Elazar says, it must become baked that literally the bottom surface becomes crusty. Mishalshalin Esar Pesach Betan or Imchashecha. You are permitted to go out if, now this is talking about a case, let's say, where Erev Shabbos, or Erev, excuse me, Erev Pesach, falls out on Erev Shabbos, so now you'd be cooking the Karban Pesach on Erev Shabbos, preparing it for Shabbos night, which is Pesach night. So you're permitted to go ahead and lower the Pesach into the oven, Imchashecha, even before it gets dark, excuse me, as it's getting dark, meaning on Erev Shabbos, close to Shabbos. Uma'achizin Es Ha'or B'Meduros Beis HaMogad. And one is permitted to go ahead and begin lighting the fire in the Meduros, literally means the pyres. Right, the pyres, the bonfires in the Beis HaMokad. Now, take a, look, a quick look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says the following, Ma'achizin Es Ha'or, Ma'at Ma'at Be'isin Shal Meduros Beis HaMokad, Shahisa Ba'azara. So we'll say, just outside, there was a chamber in the Beis HaMikdash called the Beis HaMokad, which was the fire chamber. Now, the fire chamber, Kishmo Kenu, was a chamber in which there was a fire, always burning. Why? Remember, we know that the Kohanim have to do the Avodah Yochef, they have to do it barefoot. And the floor of the Beis HaMikdash is stone. So Kohanim often got cold, and therefore there was this room that they would be able to go to when they got cold. There was this room that they go to in order to go ahead and warm themselves, called the Beis HaMukad. So the Mishnah says over here, that Halacha Lemaisa, when you light the fire, when you light the fire, the pyre for in the Beis HaMukad on Erev Shabbos, so you can go ahead as you could light on Erev Shabbos as long as Ma'achizin Es Ha'or B'Meduros. So Rashi says all you need is the fire doesn't have to take root or doesn't have to take hold of the entire pyre before Shabbos, as long as what? It begins to go ahead and catch just on some of the smaller twigs. Remember, the way you make a fire is you have some burn wood on the bottom, right? And then it catches on to the larger pieces. As long as the fire goes ahead and catches onto the smaller twigs, that's enough before Shabbos. We'll discuss this in the Gemara. Top of Chof, Ubigvulin Kadesha Tochas Ha'or Berubo. But outside of the Beis HaMikdash, if you're going ahead and lighting a fire before Shabbos, you must make sure that the fire takes hold of the majority of the pyre prior to Shabbos. Rabbi Huda says, Bepechamin, when it comes to charcoals, kol shehu, as long as the fire starts even a little bit in the coals, that's enough, because once apparently, I will say that the fear over here, of course, is that if the fire doesn't take hold of the majority of the pyre, there's a concern that maybe it won't take hold, and you're going to end up fanning the fire on Shabbos, which of course is an issue of Havara. We'll discuss why that didn't apply in the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Huda, however, says when it comes to charcoal, apparently the way it works with charcoal is once you get it started, it's definitely going to remain lit. And therefore, even if it just picks up a little bit on Erev Shabbos, that's enough. Says the Gemara, Vikama. And how much? Now, interestingly enough, what the Gemara means when it says Vikama, Vikama means how much does food have to be cooked prior to the onset of Shabbos in order to maintain it on the flame going into Shabbos? Now, we'll see why this is an interesting statement, because the Mishnah seemed to say that Ein Solin, right? Ein Sol, now, the Mishnah said Ein Solin Basar Batzel Ubeitza Ela Kadesh Yatzulim Ba'od Yom. So you can't roast meat, onions, or eggs, unless, of course, it's cooked before Shabbos. Obviously, it's because that's what we saw in the previous sugya. The concern over here is that if you have food that's partially cooked on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, we're concerned that you may come to stoke the flame, you may come to manipulate the heat source to hasten the cooking process. So the Gemara says, well, how cooked does it have to be going into Shabbos in order to remove the fear that you may come to stoke the heat source? So the Gemara says, Amar Abalaza, Amar Rav, So what's a famous Gemara? It has to be cooked enough that Ben Drusoy would eat it. Says Rashi, who was Ben Drusoy? Listimaya. He was a robber. So apparently, I guess there are certain benefits to being a robber, but one of the things that you have to give up on is you don't really have the opportunity to eat your meals with a lot of menuchas nefesh. I guess you're always on the run. So Ben Drusai, bless you, used to eat his food one-third cooked. One-third cooked. Rare. Really rare. One-third cooked. And therefore, the idea is that this establishes the most basic threshold of edibility. And I just want to point out, the Chazon Ish says that Macho Ben Drusai means, what does he mean one-third cooked? It refers to one-third cooking time. Bless you. So for example, if, let's say, it normally takes 3 hours to go ahead and cook a steak, so Macho Ben Drusai would mean that it was cooked for an hour. Cooked for an hour, one-third cooked. It's Marnami, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, So now the Gemara, once the Gemara pointed out Machal ben Drusai, the Gemara brings up another couple of situations where Machal ben Drusai has other ramifications as well. So for example, what the Gemara therefore tells us is that halacha lemaisa, as long as the food has reached this basic threshold of edibility, that it's 1/3 cooked Machal ben Drusai, you could leave it on the fire going into Shabbos, and there's no fear that one will come to manipulate the heat source since the food is already technically edible. So the Gemara says, Tanya nami ha, Itmar nami, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Koshu kimachal ben Drusai, Ein bo mishum bishulei nochrim. Similar to what the Gemara says, that if a food is cooked kimachal ben Drusai, it's no longer subject to bishul akum. So bishul akum means that you can't have it, you can't eat food cooked by an anju. You can't eat food cooked by an anju. Right? This is different than yayin nesach or stam yenom. This is, you can't eat food cooked by a non-Jew. But interestingly enough, if the food is already, let's say, machal ben Drusai, if it's already 1/3 cooked, and let's say then a non-Jew finishes off that cooking process, then halacha lemaaseh, you're permitted to eat it. Why? Because once it's reached the threshold of machal ben Drusai, it's considered halachically cooked, and therefore when the non-Jew finishes off the process, it's not called bishul akum. Tanya, Chananya Omer Koshu Kimachal ben Drusai, Motulash also Agav Akira, the Afaga Afapi Shein Grufa Ketuma. Similarly, the Chananya said that any food that is like that is reached the threshold of Machal ben Drusai, you are permitted to maintain it on an open fire, eat on a stovetop, even though the stovetop is not Grufa Ketuma. So once I will speak about this idea, Grufa Ketuma means like this. Grufa means the coals have been removed. Ketuma means that you put a blanket of earth, a blanket of dust, over the coals. The idea is that we'll discuss that when using an open fire on Shabbos, one has to go ahead and do something to the heat source in order to remove the fear that one will come to adjust it on Shabbos and therefore lead one to cooking and perhaps and havara as well. So the way they normally do it is they either clear out the coals before Shabbos or they put a blanket of dirt over the coals. That would really take away from the ability of the coals to cook. So the Gemara is saying over here, we'll do this again later on, but Chananya says that once the food is kemachal ben Drusai, you don't even have to do anything with the heat source, because there's no fear that one's going to come to manipulate it, because the food is technically readily edible. So we'll say this is halacha lemaisa. It's halacha lemaisa, that in order to maintain food going into Shabbos, on a flame, food must be at least 1/3 cooked. At least one... So that's the other option. If it's not 1/3 cooked, then you could go Kedera Chaisa, then you could go raw. The halachic problem will be in the area between raw and 1/3 cooked. So one has to be very careful with their Shabbos preparations, that food is at least 1/3 cooked going into Shabbos.
Because of the adjusting issue.
Correct. So the Gemara says, Ein nosnin es hapas. Iboiluhu. See, Mishnah saying you can't go ahead and put bread, dough, in the oven to make bread, unless, of course, there's enough time for the surface of the bread to become crusted before Shabbos. Iboiluhu. Tachton heich. Degabe tanor. Ol dilma tachton heich. Degabe haor. So the Gemara says, interestingly enough, remember, I'll say, how are they making bread? It's not like we think that they put it up. They used to stick it on the wall of the oven. So the Gemara says that you have to give it enough time on Erev Shabbos that the bottom becomes crusted. So the Gemara says, but what's the bottom? Is the bottom the part that touches the wall of the oven? Or is the bottom the part that faces the fire? So the Gemara says, and Rabbi Yosei, you'll say, who cares? It matters, because apparently Rashi points out that the part facing the fire becomes crusted faster than the part that's sticking on the oven wall. So obviously it matters. L'gabi Hilchos Shabbos, Tashma Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kedei Sheyikrimu Paneha Medubakin B'tanur. Rabbi Elazar says that you could only maintain the bread in the oven if you gave it enough time on Erev Shabbos, that the paneha, the face that is stuck to the oven, has time to become crustless. So clearly he's talking about the part that's stuck to the oven. Mishal Shalens HaPesach. So the Mishnah said that you could lower the Karba Pesach into the oven on Erev Shabbos. And also what's interesting about this is the following. That remember, what the Mishnah is doing with Karba Pesach, the Mishnah is saying Karba Pesach is different than what we mentioned before. Because the Mishnah opens up with a statement that you can't go ahead and roast meat on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, unless, of course, what? The meat is roasted prior to Shabbos. And yet then it brings down the Korban Pesach. When it says you may lower the Korban Pesach into the fire, what is that saying? The Korban Pesach is going to be relatively uncooked. Now, probably not totally raw, because otherwise that would be covered by our previous idea. But the Korban Pesach is going to, even the, you could lower the Korban Pesach into the fire before Shabbos, even if it's going to be less than a third cooked at the onset of Shabbos. So why is Korban Pesach different? My time, Mishum Dibnei Chabura's reasoning. So the Gemara says, because here's the difference. The difference is also, I remember, the whole fear with maintaining these items on the fire going into Shabbos is that one may come to manipulate the heat source. Generally, that's only a concern when one is by themselves. But because Korban Pesach is consumed in a chabura, is consumed in a group, so even if one of the members of the group attempts to do something with the heat source, the others will prevent him from doing so. B'nei Chabura's reasoning. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, one second, but we learned elsewhere, this actually, we just had this 2 days ago on Sunday, but we learned that when it comes to Gedi, when it comes to meat of a kid, now remember, Korban Pesach could either be of a lamb, right, or of a goat, but either way, it's of a very young animal. So the idea is the meat is very tender. So we learned beforehand, we learned on Sunday, that aloch lemaisa, when you have this tender meat, so a person's not going to go ahead and come to open up the oven, why? Because the wind will adversely affect the meat. So isn't that enough of a reason to go ahead and say that one could lower the Korban Pesach into the fire on Erev Shabbos, even if it's not cooked, and one's not going to come to adjust the heat source, because one doesn't want to compromise the quality of the meat, to which the Gemara says, Hasam Minsach. Hacha lo minsach. So the Gemara says, no. The difference over there, that Gemara was referring to meat that was cut up. Apparently, the tenderness of the meat, coupled with the fact that the meat is cut up into pieces, that's what makes it subject to the wind, to the air. And if the air comes in, it'll ruin the it'll compromise the quality of the meat. But the Korban Pesach, of course, where the animal is roasted whole, so the wind will not compromise the quality of the meat. Therefore, it's only because they are eating as a chabura, and one will stop the other from potentially violating Shabbos, that you could lower it into the fire even immediately before Shabbos. Uma'achizin es halar. And now remember, this is the first case over here, ma'achizin es halar b'meduras beis hamokad, that you could go ahead and light the pyre, you could light the fire in the beis hamukad, in the beis hamikdash on Erev Shabbos, and as long as the fire catches with some of the twigs, even if it doesn't catch on to the whole thing, that's okay. So the Gemara says, minhanimili, where do we know this from? Because the Torah says, you are not permitted to kindle a fire in all of your dwellings. So what do we learn from here? You may not kindle a fire in your house, but you may kindle a fire in the fire chamber of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, really? Maskif lo Rav Chista. If that's the case, then I guess you should be able to kindle the fire of the Beis HaMukad even on Shabbos itself. Because remember the pasuk of Lo Sevaru Eish B'Chomo Shosechem Yom HaShabbos is talking about when? On Shabbos. So if you're telling me, now remember, what is the Gemara picking up on? Mosh Shosechem means your homes. So the Gemara is saying, oh, it's in your homes that you can't kindle a fire, but I guess in the Beis HaMikdash you can kindle a fire. So Rav Chista says, does that mean you could even kindle this bonfire at Lechatkila on Shabbos? We know that's not true. You can't do that on Shabbos. Elo Amar Rav Chista Kra Ki Asa L'Mishra Ivarim Upidarim Hu. So the Gemara says, no. What Lo Sevaru Eish B'Chomo Shosechem Yom HaShabbos comes to teach us is that what? Is that you are permitted to burn the leftover fats and the leftover limbs on Shabbos. So what the Torah does come to teach you is that Halacha L'Maisa, you are permitted to kindle a fire for sacrificial purposes on Shabbos, whether it's for the actual offering of the karbans or to burn or karbanos or to go ahead and burn the leftover fats and limbs. That's permitted. It does not permit you to go ahead and light the bonfire in the Beis HaMukad, in the fire chamber on Shabbos, because that has nothing to do with sacrificial service. So then why can you go ahead and light it on Erev Shabbos, and as long as a couple of the twigs catch on fire, that's okay, even if the whole pyre is not on fire? Remember, I was like, the concern with the pyre is what? We would, under normal circumstances, just like we are outside of the Beis HaMikdash, if you're lighting a bonfire on Erev Shabbos, you must make sure that the fire takes to the majority of the pyre on Erev Shabbos, because we're concerned that if that doesn't happen, you may come to fan the fire on Shabbos itself. Why does this concern not occur in the Beis HaMikdash? To which the Gemara says, the Kohanim's reason, hey, because the Kohanim are the reason. I mean, what does that mean? That the Kohanim are there, and the Kohanim are very on top of things. So the Kohanim are very meticulous, and they're not going to come to fan the fire and violate Malacha on Shabbos. It's a similar but yet a different answer than the one we gave before. On one hand, it's talking about the nature of Kohanim in general, who are very meticulous with the Halacha, but it's also the same Chabura idea, that they're not there as individuals, they're there as a group. The assumption always when a person is violating Halacha, we're not talking about over here intentional violation of Halacha, we're talking about a concern about an accidental violation. Accidental violations usually occur when one is alone, and therefore in any group situation, that concern doesn't really apply. Correct. Like if for some reason the Eish on the Mizbeach went out, they'd be permitted to go ahead and do that. Says the Gemara, B'gvulin Kadesh HaTochas. And outside of the Beis HaMikdash, however, if you're lighting a bonfire on Erev Shabbos, you have to make sure that the fire takes to the majority of the pyre prior to Shabbos. My Ruan. So the Gemara is asking a very simple question. What is the majority? What is the majority? Amarav, Rov Kol Echot Ve'echot. So Rav says it means the majority of each and every log. Ushmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Kadesh Lo Yomru, Hava Eitzim V'Nanyach Tachteyen. And Shmuel says that the fire has to be strong enough that a person doesn't say, quick, bring some more wood to go ahead and intensify the fire. Which is not so meaning Rav is saying a little bit more stark. That's Rav is saying has to literally take the majority of each piece of wood has to be on fire. Shmuel essentially says, as long as the fire is clearly burning on its own, that's enough. So the Gemara says, Tani Rav Chiyah, let's hear the Shmuel. So Rav Chiyah went ahead and came and tried to bring a support to Shmuel. Kedesh shetehe shal heves ola me'eleha, velo shetehe shal heves ola al yedei davar acher. So Rav Chiyah comes in support of Shmuel and he says that the fire has to be strong enough that the flame is burning on its own and that the flame no longer needs any additional assistance to burn. Eitz yichidi, what happens if you're burning one log? Right, one log. So what? How much of the log has to be on fire prior to the onset of Shabbos? Rav Amar, Mr. Well said, you have to appreciate this. We look at this and it's a little bit of a, for us it's not Salah Chalamaisa, but remember certainly in the days where people were using fire, not just for cooking, but for heating as well, this was a big to-do. Because you have to figure out how much of your fire has to be lit prior to the onset of Shabbos. So what happens if you have one log? So Rav Amar Rov Avyov. So Rav says the majority of its thickness must be on fire. Va'amri Leberov HaKefo. Others say the majority of its circumference. Amar Rav Papa Hilchach. Ba'inan Rov Avyov. Uba'inan Rov HaKefo. Therefore, in reality, Rav Papa says that if you're burning a log, you should make sure that both the majority of its thickness and circumference are on fire. Kitanoi. Rav Chiya Amar. Kedesh Sheyishchas Ha'itz Mimalechas Ha'umar. Rav Chiya says that a log, alright, when you're burning wood, so the wood has to be on fire to the point that it would no longer be usable by a craftsman. Right? That the log is so consumed by fire that a craftsman would not be able to fashion, a carpenter wouldn't be able to fashion anything out of it. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Kadesh Tochas Ha'ish Mishnei Tzadin. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira would say that the fire catches on from both ends of the log. And even though there's no explicit proof to this particular measurement or threshold, there's a zecher, there's a scriptural allusion. What's a scriptural allusion? So here he's quoting the pasuk from Yechezkel, as shnei kitzosav achla ha'ish v'socho nachar hayitzlach l'melacha. So the Navi says, if the two shnei kitzosav achla ha'ish, if the fire eats the two sides, v'socho nachar, and the inside becomes parched, can it be used for melacha? So the Navi is giving an image over here, and he's describing a log that can no longer be used, he's describing it as burning on both sides. Okay? V'ha'ach, it's interesting enough, so now the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. So the pasuk over here is from Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Vav. V'es ha'ach lefanav mivu'eres. And the ach was burning before him. My ach, what's an ach, says the Gemara? My ach, Amarav, achvana. Oh, what's an ach? An ach is an achvana. All right. We'll see them in just a moment. Ushmuel Amar, Ushmuel Amar, Eitzim Shenidlaku ba'achvana. Now, Shmuel says what it refers to is wood or trees that are burned in brotherhood, that are burned together. So let's go back to this achvana for just a moment. Hahud amar lehu man boy achvana. So they once heard a man asking, who wants to buy an achvana? Ishtachach arafta. And it turns out what? That he was selling aravos. So we'll say an ach is a willow tree. Ach is a rafta, an aravo. Amar Rav Huna. Now, why is this important for us? Now, the Gemara just used these psukim to introduce a discussion about burning aravos. Right? So if you're burning aravos, remember the fundamental question is going to be how much does the fire have to catch onto the item in order to allow you to do it Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos. So Amar Rav Huna, kanim ein tzrichin rov. Kanim are reeds, right? Are reeds. Reeds do not need rov. What does that mean? That halacha l'maisa, the fire does not have to take hold of the majority of the object prior to the onset of Shabbos. The assumption is meaning once it starts to burn, we know it's going to burn, even if it hasn't burned on the majority of it. Ogdon, however, if you went ahead and you tied the reeds together, tzrichin rov. Then, prior to Shabbos, you must make sure that the fire has taken hold of the majority of the bundle, which is interesting because we would normally assume that a bundle burns better. Rashi points out that there's a concern that when they're bundled tightly together, the fire may not be able to get to every single spot, and therefore you have to make sure that the fire takes hold on the majority of the bundle. Gar'inin, what about pits? Rashi says, gar'inin shal tamra. So apparently, date pits, I guess, are flammable. So Rashi says, if you go ahead and you're making a bonfire from pits, ain't tzrichin rov. Again, same thing. You don't need the majority of the fire to catch on prior to Shabbos. Noslan bechoslos, but if you put the pits in a basket, then same concern, tzrichin rov, because then once they're piled on top of the other, the fear is that the fire may not touch every single spot, and therefore, aloch l'maisa, there must be a rov. Maskif lo Rav Chista adrabo. Rav Chista contradicted this. He said just the opposite. Ipcha mistabra. The opposite would appear to be true. Kanim mevadron. Kanin mevadron, right? If the reeds are independent, there's a concern that they'll scatter. Scatter, right? Meaning if you're just burning independent reeds, who's to say they're going to stay together, in which case the fire won't be cohesive? Ogdon, but if you bind them together, lo mevadron, they won't scatter. And therefore the assumption would be that halach l'maisa, when should you require rov? When the reeds are individual, but if they're bundled together, you shouldn't require a rov. Garinin pits, mevadron, by themselves, they'll scatter. Nostan becholslos, but if you put them in baskets, lo mevadron, then they won't scatter. Itmar nami, stigmarks we've said as well. Amar Rav Kahana, kanim sha'agdan tzrichin rov. So Rav Kahana takes a little bit of a hybrid approach. So Rav Kahana says that if you bound reeds together, then when you light them on Erev Shabbos, so they require a rov. You must make sure that the majority of the bundle has caught on fire prior to Shabbos. Lo agdan, if you did not go ahead and tie them together, then ain't tzrichin rov, then halacha l'maaseh, at least when it comes to the reeds, you don't require a rov. Gar'inin, when it comes to if you're burning the date pits, tzrichin rov, they require a majority. Right? Meaning individual date pits require a majority. The majority of it has to be on fire prior to the onset of Shabbos. Nasnan bechoslos, but if you put it in a basket, ain't tzrichin rov. It does not require a majority. Tani Rav Yosef. Arba meduros ein tzrichin rov. There are four fires that don't require a rov. Now, what Rav Yosef is saying is, there are four fires where we know once you kindle them, they will remain lit. They will remain lit. And what are they? Shel zefes, of pitch. Shel gafres, sulfur. Shel gvina, of cheese. Vishel revav, and fat. Now, this cheese part is interesting. So Rashi points out over here, revav, shuman, vishava, v'chol davar hanitach. So Rashi changes, according to most opinions, Rashi changes gavina to shava, to wax. That's why you see that letter gimel in the brackets over there. So many change cheese to wax. I'm not sure, which makes sense. So if you have, let's go with Rashi's approach and the other approach. So if you have pitch, sulfur, wax, and fat, right? If you go ahead and you burn these items, make a fire from these items, then halacha l'maisa, they don't need rov, because once you light them, they will remain lit. It's also possible that when they talk about, let's say, a fire of sulfur, these things, they might be talking about where they mixed it with other things as well, to I guess, increase the flammability of these items. But the point is, once you started the fire from these items, one doesn't have to worry about rov because the fire will stay. So the Gemara says, we've also learned, af shalkash v'shalgavava. This also applies to a fire of straw and of stubble. Amar Rav Yochanan, Eitzim shel Bavel ein tzrichin rov. Rav Yochanan says the trees, the wood of Bavel, does not require a rov. Does not require a rov. So the Gemara says, Maskif la Rav Yosef, Mahi, what are the trees of Bavel? What does that refer to? Ilema silti. If you say it refers to the silsi, so look at Rashi. Rashi says silsi la'achar sha'asom eitzin daki and bavel noagin came. So apparently in Bavel, what they used to do with their wood is they would make their wood into very thin strips. So if you're talking about a fire that's made of one of thin strips, sahashta psila amar ula hamadlik tzara sheyadlik berov. Right, Barov Hayotze, still semi boy. So we'll say, if it's talking about the thin strips of wood that they used to make in Bavel, well, that doesn't make sense because Ula said that when you light a wick, which is easily flammable as well, you have to make sure that the majority of the wick that extends out of the oil catches on fire. That would certainly apply to the strips of Babylonian wood as well. That Aloha Masi, if you light them, the majority should have to remain on fire as well. Ella Amar Rav Yosef, so what do we mean by Babylonian wood? Shuka da'arza. So look at Rashi. Shuka da'arza is the branch of a cedar tree. Rashi says, Shuka da'arza yaveshu. Vidak, it is drying and it's thin. V'yesh k'min tsemer ben klipa le'etz. And there is almost like a woolly substance in between the bark and the tree itself, I guess the inside of the tree. V'hu mav'iro, and this causes it to be exceptionally flammable, misha achsa boha'ar, as soon as the fire takes hold of it. So therefore, this is what the Gemara is saying over here. So Rabbi Yochanan says that Eitzim Shalabavel, if you burn this dried out branch of the cedar tree, you don't need rov, since it's exceptionally flammable. Once you light it on fire, it will remain on fire. Rami Bar Abba Amar Zaza. Rami Bar Abba says that it refers to Rashi says Zaza Mulsha Belaz, moss. That apparently this Babylonian moss was also known to be exceptionally flammable. So I was like, what comes out halacha lemaaseh from this particular sugya, and we're not finished with it, is specifically for us, the fire part is not really as lemaaseh for us as the beginning of the daf with the machal ben drusoy. So just a quick word about that. Now we will come back to it. We're not finished with that sugya yet. But halacha lemaaseh, the idea over here is that in order to maintain food going into a fire on Erev Shabbos going into Shabbos, the food must be 1/3 cooked. In the event that alleviates any concern, the Shami Yechata, that one may come to adjust the heat source. In the event that one can't have their food 1/3 cooked prior to the onset of Shabbos, then halacha lemaisa, one could rely on the Kedera Chaisa, on the raw pot idea, which we learned on Sunday, which essentially says that halacha lemaisa, if the food is totally raw at the onset of Shabbos, one is not going to use it Friday night, and therefore there's no concern of Shami Yechata. The idea of the blech as we have it today, is all about, is supposed to go ahead and serve as a reminder that we don't come to adjust the flame. That's the whole idea of the blech. It's not really to diminish the cooking power of the fire, because the blech doesn't necessarily do that. It's to serve as a reminder that we should not adjust the heat source. That says a very interesting machlokes in Ramosha and everyone else about whether or not a blech must cover the knobs of the stove as well. So many posts can say if the whole idea of the blech is that you shouldn't come to adjust the heat source, then what? Then it should certainly cover the knobs. Because otherwise, what are you doing? Others say no. The idea is just having the blech there is enough of a reminder that you're not supposed to manipulate the heat source, and even if the knobs are not covered. Rav Aaron Cutler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, went so far to say that you don't even need a blech. He said, you know what you could do? Take the knobs off. Just take the knobs off. If you take the knobs off, and therefore you can't go ahead and manipulate the heat source, that in and of itself is, right, ein blech gedola mizon. Right? There's no greater blech than that. Again, that's not certainly not the generally held opinion, but just know that all of those sukkahs essentially come from two lines of our Gemara of Shemi Yechata. Hajra Allah Yitzios HaShabbos. Alright, Shabbos, so now we're going to give it new meaning to these tefillah that we say every single Friday night. Now you're going to, not just going to say it, you're going to steig it every week. So the Gemara says, what can we light, with what can we light on Shabbos, and with what can we not light on Shabbos? Now Rashi points out over here, lasos psila. The first part of the Mishnah is dafka referring to materials with which you can make a wick on Shabbos. So what can you use, what materials can you use for a wick, and what can you not use for a wick? So number one, now both sides, a lot, we're going to read some of these things. I'm going to translate it for you quickly, but the real translations will come from the Gemara. But all right, Eimadlikin lo belechesh. So you can't go ahead and light with cedar bast. We'll discuss what that is. Velo bechosen. I just took all this out of the art scroll cedar, so this is not my command of Eimadlikin. Lo bechosen, lo bekaloch. You can't go ahead and light with kaloch. We'll see that translated in the Gemara. And you can't go ahead and light. The truth is, Rashi brings down some of these as well. You can't light with Psila Sa'idon. So, okay, well, Kalach is literally floss silk. Psila Sa'idon is willow bast. Velo Psila Samidbar. And you can't go ahead and use desert fiber. Velo Biroka Sha'al Pnei Amayim. You can't go ahead. Yokra Sha'al Pnei Amayim literally sounds like algae. Velo Bezefes. Can't use pitch. Velo B'shava. Now remember, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead a little bit over here. So the first part of the Mishnah is speaking about wicks. Once we get to Zephes, Rashi points out over here, is not talking about wicks anymore, but rather we're talking about oil. Right? So the first items were things you can't use as a wick. Now again, Rashi points out over here that we'll see the common denominator between all of these things is that they don't draw up the oil well. So they were concerned that if you use a wick that doesn't draw up the oil, you may come to what? You may come to have to adjust the wick, and there's always a fear of havara. There's always a fear of kindling, and also there's also potential fear of kibbuy, of ultimately extinguishing. Now, the mission is going to talk about oils that you can't use, and the reason you can't use these oils is because, again, they don't burn well. So whenever something doesn't burn well, there's also a concern that one may come to adjust it on Shabbos, which could lead to havara. Therefore, lo b'zefes, you can't use pitch, v'lo b'shava, you can't use wax, v'lo b'shem and kick, and you can't use kick oil. V'lo b'shem and sreifa, you can't use burnt oil, lo b'alya. Alya literally refers to the fat that comes from the tail of an animal. V'lo b'chelif, you can't use regular fat. Nachum ha-madi omer, Nachum the Madi says, madlikin b'chelif mevushal, you can use cooked fat for oil. V'chachamim om nachum say echad mevushal, v'echad she'ena mevushal, ein madlikin bo. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that whether it's mevushal, whether it's not mevushal, you can't use it. Fine. So says the Gemara. Lechesh, what is lechesh? So we translate it. So shucha de arza. Literally, it means the bark of the cedar tree. So the Gemara says, shucha de arza eitz ba'amo. What do you mean bark of the cedar tree? You can't use that for a wick. It's wood, right? It's wood, to which the Gemara says, ba'amremisa de ispe. It refers to literally the wool that's within it. Apparently, if you go ahead and you peel back the outer bark of the cedar tree, there is a wool-like substance that is within the tree that you could, technically speaking, take out and twist into a wick. That is what it's referring to. So apparently it doesn't draw up the oil well, and therefore you may not use it on Shabbos. Velo bechosen, you can't use chosen. Omer Rav Yosef, nu'uros shel pishtan. It refers to broken flax fiber. So apparently, when you made flax, there were certain smaller fibers that you really could not so usable. That's called the Oro Shel Pishtan. Amar Li Abaye, but Abaye says, V'hoksiv, V'haya, Ha-chosen l'na'ores. But the Pasuk says that the chosen will be for na'ores, which would seem to indicate, Michlal de'chusan lav na'oresu, which seems to indicate that chusan and na'ores are two different things. El Amar Abaye, Kisna the dayik velo nafitz, says Abai, you're right. You know what it is? It refers to uncombed flax. Right? Nu'urosh, excuse me, chosen is uncombed flax. So apparently uncombed flax also can't be used as a wick because it won't conduct the fire well. Velo bekaloch, you can't use kaloch. So Amr Shmuel, Sha'al tinhu l'chol nechuse yama. I asked all of, nechuse yama means all of the sea travelers. I asked all of the worldly people. And they said to me, Kulcha Shme. Its name is Kulcha. Now remember, we translated Kulcha before, or Kalach, as floss silk. So here you have Shmuel saying, I asked all of the world travelers, and they told me it's not called Kalach, it's called Kulcha. Rav Yitzchak Bar Zeira Amar Gushkara. Rav Yitzchak Bar Zeira said it's called Gushkara. Alright, they're all just giving the same name. I was going to see Rashi here for just a moment. Alright, we don't have to do it now. Ravin va'abaye, havo yasi kame de ravna nechemya, achu de resh kalusa. So the Gemara says over here that Ravin and Abaye were sitting in front of Ravna Nechemya, who was the brother of the resh kalusa. Chazye, the havo lavish mitakso. They saw that he was wearing metaxa. Look at Rashi, it's actually right across metaxa. Lavush ha'osui ma'osa klach. They saw he was wearing some type of silken garment. Amalei Ravin la'abaye, so Ravin got very excited, said to Abaye, oh, honey, hainu klach disnan. That's the klach, right? That's the klach of the Mishnah. Amar lei, anon shira peranda karina lei. We don't call it klach. We call it peranda silk. Meisei hashiroim v'haklach v'hasrikin chayavin betzitzis. So the Gemara says that the Gemara quotes the Mishnah that talks about tzitzis, and it says shiroim is silk, klach is klach, srikin, all of these different fabrics. Rashi says srikin asui min ameshi, also made from some type of cotton or wool, that's soft fabric. Chayavin betzitzis, all of these things are chayavin tzitzis. So the Gemara says tiyuf to the Ravin is refutation of Ravin. Why is it refutation? Because what do you see? You see that shiroin, silk, and klach are reckoned as two different items, which would seem to indicate that what? That klach is not silk. To which the Gemara says, ibois ema shira luchud v'shira paranda luchud. It could very well be that they are just different types of silk. So there's shira paranda, which is one type of silk, and there's regular silk, which is another type of silk. So therefore the Gemara says that essentially klach is some variation of silk. You will not be able to use a silk wick for Shabbos because apparently it does not draw the oil well. Fine. Velo psila sa'idon. Velo psila sa'idon. And you may not use psila sa'idon. So the Gemara says, achvina. That refers to achvina. Rashi says, remember, we just had this on Amud Aleph. Right? Achavna. What does it refer to? The willow. So Rashi points out, arava, the yish kumin semer, ben klipa le'ed. So apparently the willow tree, like the cedar tree, if you pull back the bark, there is some type of almost like woolly type of substance within the tree that technically speaking could be used for a wick, but you can't use it on Shabbos. Ravin va'abaye, havu ka'azlu, bepiksa ditam rurisa. So Rava and Abaye were walking. Rashi says, Piksa is Bika, in the valley of Tamrurisa. In the valley of Tamrurisa. So what happened? Chazinhu lahano arbasa. They saw this arbasa. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, They saw this arbasa. Amr le Ravin la Abaye, Hainu Idan. So Abaye said to Ravin, oh, that's Idan. This nun, Amr le, Hahi eats ba'almai. So he said to him, but one second, that's only eights. Meaning they were walking. The point the Gemara is saying is they were walking together, and apparently Ravin got very excited because they saw this Arvasa, and Ravin said to Abaye, that's the Idan of the Mishnah. So Abaye says to him, how could that be Idan? Amr le, Hahi eats ba'almahu. It's only a tree. What did he do? Kalaf v'ach v'lei amrenisa de beni beni. So apparently what he did is he pulled back the bark and he showed him the woolly substance that was in between the bark and the tree. Alright? V'lo b'psilas hamidbar. And you can't use this psilas hamidbar. So the Gemara says, what's that? Shavra. That's Shavra. Okay, look at Rashi. Shavra min esev aruch. Apparently a very tall grass. The Koran also urtia. So you can't, this very tall grass which grows in the desert, that I guess technically speaking could be used as a wick as well, can't use it on Shabbos. Velo, I will say we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up right with these two dots. Velo biroka shapane amai. So what's a common denominator in all of these things, just halacha l'maisa, all of the items, all of the wicks mentioned, cannot be used because halacha l'maisa, they don't draw the fire up well, and all of the oils can't be used because they don't. We didn't get to the oils yet, but at least you understand the rhyme and reason for the Mishnah with the wicks.